recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty.
Good evening and welcome to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. I'm Corey LaBounty in the studio with the executive producer tonight, Ian Blair. And on the phone lines with us, he is on the South Alabama Searching Committee for a new head football coach, the one and only Dalton Erwig. Dalton, good evening.
Thank you, Corey. Thank you. Yeah, and out searching for the next head coach. That's what I've been tasked with by South Alabama here.
Well, the biggest news of the weekend, Dalton, it didn't have anything to do with Alabama and Auburn. It happened right here in our own backyard with South Alabama firing head football coach Steve Campbell after 3 years. He was only 9-26, 0-3 versus their biggest rival in Troy. In his first year, Coach Campbell was 3-9. You kind of give him a pass on that. Last year, he was 2-10, and this year, he was 4-7. If you're optimistic about it, you say they doubled their win total. But when you look at the situation, I mean, he came to South Alabama after being 33-15 at Central Arkansas, but it's going to cost South Alabama $350,000 to buy out the fourth year of Coach Campbell's contract. And the reason that South Alabama is going to have to move swiftly, Dalton, is because December 16th is the early signing period for seniors now. There's two signing periods, December and February. And just want to get your thoughts. I know South Alabama and Troy both mean a lot to you.
Yeah, and I guess my main thought is that it was time. After this game on Saturday, I'm not sure anyone, even the most cynical South Alabama fan at this point, thought that we would get blown out by a mediocre at best Troy team this year. I thought, you know, I didn't exactly expect us to win the game, but at least keep it close, especially with it being the big rivalry game. And, you know, I went to Troy for 2 years and then transferred and went to South, but I pull for the Jags constantly. I mean, a big Jags fan. And I guess I am a little surprised that Erdman went ahead and made the move. I thought it was the right move, but I just, for some reason, felt they were going to give Campbell one more shot. And maybe they would have if it wasn't such a brutal loss on Saturday. But you can't keep losing like that. And like you said, 9 wins over 3 seasons when you're in a football, you know, mecca like Mobile, Alabama, and a place where, I mean, I'm sure you're going to talk a lot about the Super 7 tonight and how many great high school athletes and teams we have, and to not be able to put a better organization together in the Sun than to put a better South Alabama team out there on the field when just look what Coastal Carolina
absolutely
did over the weekend in that game against BYU. I mean, it's not absurd to say that could be South Alabama. South Alabama could be getting that same notoriety. They could be playing just as well as Coastal Carolina, who's now, what, ranked 11th in the nation? And I guess Campbell, I don't know, I thought he would be successful when he came in. I guess something just didn't work out with him. But really, you know, in a franchise or in a school like South Alabama, we're not going to be an Alabama or an Auburn where a coach is successful and stays here for decades. We, at South Alabama, I think every 3 or 4 years we're going to have a new coach. And that coach is either going to be extremely successful or not successful at all. And they'll either move on to the next place or they'll have to be let go. And that's why I hope that with this next coaching search, they go out and get somebody young and can relate to the players. But also, you know, look at all these offensive geniuses that are out there that we're seeing do so well in the NFL. I really hope Erdman and the South Alabama searching crew kind of goes in that direction.
When you start talking about the Sun Belt and the standings, you mentioned Coastal Carolina beating BYU this weekend. Coastal Carolina is now 7-0 in the Sun Belt Conference, 10-0 overall and had that huge win on national television against BYU, and it came down to a goal line stand. But at the end of the day, Coastal Carolina found a way to get it done. And the Sun Belt Conference is missing a couple of coaches now as Louisiana Monroe fires their head coach, Matt Viator, after five seasons, and he was only 19-39 in five seasons, 0-10 this year with Troy remaining on the schedule. So that leaves vacancies at South Alabama, Louisiana Monroe, Utah State, and Vandy in part of college football, Dalt.
Well, you know, I think Bruce Feldman, of all people, he wrote a pretty long article either earlier today or over the weekend about how big of a position the South Alabama coaching job is. And when they got rid of Joey Jones and they let him go 4 years ago, it just didn't seem like as many people were talking about how big of a stepping stone the South Alabama job could be to another job. And I was surprised then that our school down here wasn't getting more notoriety. But with Feldman writing a huge piece, and he mentioned some of the names that could be coming down here, one that I've seen a lot is Womack, the former defensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
And and you might know more about him than I do, Corey. Actually, I'm sure you do. But another name that I'm just not sure whether this would be a step down or a lateral move for him is T. Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And at a school that I know really well, he's the assistant offensive coordinator in Tennessee, or he's the receivers coach with the Tennessee Volunteers.
He is.
I know that they would reach out to him, but I'm not sure if this would be a step down for him, or because I could easily see Vanderbilt hiring a guy like T. Martin. And if Vanderbilt comes calling and South Alabama comes calling, you know, who gets the priority there? You would have to assume the SEC school.
Yeah, I agree with you. You mentioned Cain Womack. So far, he's Indiana's defensive coordinator currently, and the Hoosiers are 6-1. And Cain was the defensive coordinator of South Alabama on Joey Jones' staff in 2016 and 2017. You mentioned some other names, John Gross from Jacksonville State, Jim McElwain from Central Michigan. He's head coach at Central Michigan. Lance Taylor, the running backs coach at Notre Dame. Charles Huff, who's Alabama's running back coach, and Rhett Lashley, Miami's offensive coordinator. He was Auburn's offensive coordinator from 2013 through 2016, or on Auburn's staff at that point in time. So, Dalton, I agree with you with the brand new stadium, Hancock Whitney Stadium, right there on South Alabama's campus. It's an awesome facility. You have the indoor facility that's in walking distance. You have all the resources to be very and super successful as a program, and I agree with you. I think, in the past, you're talking about basketball. John Pelfrey definitely used South Alabama as a stepping stone to take the Arkansas Razorbacks head coaching job, and I think that if we're able to keep a college coach here 4 or 5 years or longer, and they mm-hmm. are successful, I agree, Dalt. I think that that will lead to greener pastures for whoever is able to come here and be successful.
Yeah, see, for a group of five school, I don't think that it's terrible to be a stepping stone school. Actually, I think if you want to be anything but, then you're kind of fooling yourself. Unless you're one of the, you know, blue chip programs, or you're a guy who can turn your school into a blue chip program, South Alabama is never going to be a school where you have a guy come in and put up, you know, 9-3, 10-2 seasons year after year and just keep that same job. It's never going to be the case. And that's why I think, you know, 3 years, 4 years, you about know what you're getting by then, certainly after 4 years. But after 3 years, you have a pretty good idea of who's in charge and where your program's headed. And that's why I think, you know, a school like South, I mean, Joey Jones was the head coach for a long time, and there's a lot of people that say he should have never been let go. And that might not be the worst take ever right now, but from here on out, I would be surprised if South had one coach for longer than 5, 6, 7 years, because that whoever they hire, they're either going to come in and do a fantastic job and move on to bigger, better, greener pastures, or they're going to flame out in 3 years just like Steve Campbell did. I don't think there's going to be any in between there.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dalton. I don't think anybody can afford to go and struggle at South Alabama's program for 3 years, but Dr. Urban, the athletic director, couldn't afford to keep Coach Campbell around for one more year, trying to renew his fourth year of his contract or give him a renewal based on the win-loss record. And look forward to seeing here in the next couple of weeks where South Alabama goes in direction of a new head coach and bringing excitement to hopefully a COVID-free atmosphere next football season at Hancock-Whitney Stadium. Dalton, continue the search, my friend, for South Alabama's new head football coach, and it's always a pleasure, and look forward to having you back in the studio with us next week right here Monday night on Sports Night.
Hey, man, Corey, I appreciate it. You and Ian are doing a fantastic job, and keep up the good work, man. I pray that I'll be back in by Monday, next Monday night.
No question about it. The one and only Dalton Orwig joining us on the phone line tonight. Want to thank him for his time. And when you start talking about the decision that has to be made, again, December 16th is the early signing period, and it's important to have a coach in place so you can talk to the new recruits, the guys who have already recruited, the returning starters, the returning players. That's going to be critical to move this South Alabama program forward. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5. Coming up next, we'll recap the Alabama-LSU beatdown and talk Auburn-Texas A&M also.
Sports talk to start your week. You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night.
Welcome back to Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5. I'm Corey Labounty, along with Ian Blair, producing tonight's show. And it was a great week of college football action, top 25-wise. And we talked about it 1 week ago about Alabama-LSU and the matchup down in Baton Rouge and to see what was going to happen. And exactly what we thought was going to happen did happen. The beatdown, the worst loss by a defending national champion, also the worst loss by LSU that they've incurred while playing Alabama. And there was no question who the best team was on the football field. But Mac Jones continues to impress and put up Heisman-worthy numbers along with Devontae Smith. And I think two out of four Alabama players will be invited to New York or will be part of the Heisman Trophy ceremony.
I mean, I want to highlight a specific catch by Devontae Smith in that game. That third touchdown of his, that one-hander, that looked almost identical to the Odell Beckham Jr. catch, which NFL fans are going to feel old hearing this, was 6 years ago. 6 years ago. And to be able to have that kind of player on your team is obviously a dangerous threat. But one thing I want to bring up, Corey, you call it again. We have a habit of doing this where we get predictions right and some people kind of give us flack for it, and then it winds up being true. Mac Jones not only leads the nation in pass completion percentage, did not hurt that over Saturday, did not hurt that at all. But one thing I need to highlight, and this was a stat that blew my mind completely, is that Mac Jones has the highest completion percentage not only in the nation, but also among various SEC quarterbacks with the fewest amount of games with 30 pass attempts or more. So he is definitely out there being efficient with it and is being very, very precise in how he attacks and where he attacks from.
Well, you're talking about him being precise. Mac Jones had 338 yards and four touchdowns by halftime. Not for the game, but by halftime. And you're an Alabama fan, and the score is 46-14. And you're sitting there, and you're 45-14, rather. You're trying to figure out, well, will Alabama score 90? On LSU, or will they come out in the second half and take their foot off of the throat? Because you and I talked about it 1 week ago, the words that Coach O uttered after their huge win over Alabama last year. You know, now Coach Saban, you don't poke the goat. They say don't poke the bear. No, don't poke the goat in that situation, especially in Bryant Denny, when you come down and you start saying things like this is our house at Bryant Denny and other words that I'm not going to repeat about Alabama. And don't think that Alabama's players and coaches all week long weren't repeating that and didn't have that blast and it didn't have those images all over the locker room. I mean, you can call it a coincidence or not, folks, but the power at Alabama's hotel was cut before they went over to Death Valley. And I don't think that's a type of coincidence, but the power definitely was not out of Alabama's high and explosive offense as Devontae Smith continues to put up ridiculous numbers. 8 receptions for 231 yards, 3 touchdowns, and to me, one of possibly the Heisman poses or catches of the season, because there's ultimately that Heisman moment. And will this be Devontae Smith's Heisman moment is yet to be determined. And what I hope does not happen is votes get split between Devontae Smith and Mac Jones to determine who is the top player in the country, because you start looking at Kyle Trask, and we talked about it last week too, that head-to-head matchup in 2 weeks between Mac Jones and Kyle Trask can ultimately decide and sway voters' opinions.
Splitting votes is one of the things that you do not want to do there. But one thing I want to bring up, and I've heard several people mention several names in this Heisman debate, Kyle Trask being one of them. What I want to bring up, Corey, is a bit of a comparison between Trask and Mac, and not only the way that they play, but also who you think would be the better fit on various teams, or maybe who's even the better player going into the draft.
You know, people start talking about Kyle Trask as an NFL quarterback, and I think the most important thing for Kyle Trask is going to be his week in the Senior Bowl. Can he increase his value and his stock moving forward when he comes to Mobile, Alabama, and is supposed to participate? So I think with him and Mac Jones, of course, having an opportunity to come back to Alabama next year if he so chooses. If I'm Mac Jones, Devontae Smith came back, Najee Harris came back. If you really love the college atmosphere, which Mac Jones seems to do, because him and A.J. McCarron probably have the most fun playing the game of football that I've seen at that Alabama quarterback position. And Tua was just precise, and you knew he was on point, and he had that great smile too. But these guys just seem to be loosey-goosey from the quarterback situation. But I don't know. To answer your question, I think Kyle Trask, he's gonna have to prove himself at the Senior Bowl. And if he's able to do that, I think that Alabama's defense will have a lot to say whether their quarterback will be selected to win the Heisman Trophy or be a final candidate ahead of Kyle Trask, but that's just my opinion.
I think the SEC championship will be a kind of a fortune tells all sort of scenario where it's going to be Mac and Kyle Trask in that battle. God forbid one of them, knock on wood here, you know, one of them gets hurt, injured before then. I hope that doesn't happen, because these are the type of matchups that we want to see. But I honestly think that for Alabama versus Florida in general, for the SEC championship, because that's been the favorite matchup so far since the season began, was Alabama and Florida. You know, spare what Texas A&M will have to say about that. But one thing I want to bring up here is I honestly think that SEC championship outcome, if that does come into fruition after all, is going to be just coming down to whoever has the ball last, because it's both offenses that are hyper.
Well, you're looking at a situation, Ian, to where Alabama visits Arkansas, and then Florida is going to play LSU. Well, we know Mac Jones' numbers against LSU this past week were 20 out of 28 for 385, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. This LSU defense struggles. They have struggled all season long. You look at the opening game against Mississippi State and the horrendous job that they did. And I think Bo Pelini is in trouble as the defensive coordinator at LSU. I don't think we'll see a second year of Bo Pelini in this Ed Orgeron era moving forward. And LSU is 3-5. And the thing about Alabama is that they have been able to sustain it year in and year out. It's not a one-year wonder. Alabama has put the most professionals or has the most pros that you've seen out of any college within that time frame. And Alabama's retooled their entire defense and offense year in and year out with pros going in the first or second round. But let's look at the top 25. Alabama, again, unanimous number one. Notre Dame comes in at number two. Ohio State at number three. Clemson at number four. Texas A&M at five. Florida at six. Cincinnati at seven. Indiana at eight. Miami at nine. Iowa State at 10. And as Dalton mentioned, Coastal Carolina comes in and moves up to 11. Georgia is 12th, Oklahoma's 13th, BYU drops to 14th, Northwestern is 15th. But I want to go back and focus on those top six because Notre Dame is going to face Clemson in the ACC championship. They're going to have 2 weeks to prepare for that. So if you start to look at it, I still say Ohio State does not belong because they're 5-0. Getting ready to play Michigan. If Michigan stays COVID-free, there's been a lot of talk whether that game will happen or not. But Ohio State at three, Clemson at four. So you know if Notre Dame is able to beat Clemson, then you know Clemson's out. But if Clemson's able to beat Notre Dame, do you put a one-loss Notre Dame in there along with the one-loss Texas A&M? And if Alabama defeats Florida, we'll start talking mathematically as to what can happen in the next segment, along with talking Auburn Tigers football, who came up short against the Texas A&M Aggies, which allows the Aggies to stay tight at number five. You're listening to Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night, back from the break. I'm a rock fan, excuse my taste in music. Corey, we have to get into a conversation here that, of course, as always, if you listeners want to get in on, you can text or call your thoughts, questions, concerns, comments at 251-343-0106. Corey, we have a conversation that we need to get to about this Auburn team. More importantly, this Texas A&M team and where they're going to end up. Because I'm sitting here and I'm looking at – this is just obviously me looking at the stats here. But I also was able to listen to the game play-for-play called by Andy Burcham on the Auburn Sports Network here at FM Talk 106.5. And I have to point out here that Tank Bigsby, even though he wasn't – exactly 100%, was still healthy enough to play, was not the leading rusher for Auburn.
Who was the leading rusher?
Bo Nix for 11 carries, 49 yards total, and Bo Nix actually had two touchdowns on the ground. No passing touchdowns to be spoken of. I want to get to this quarterback duel that we had between Mond and Nix because this defined the game like so many quarterback duels do. Mond, 18 of 23, 196 yards, 8.5 yard average there with two passing touchdowns, no interceptions. I go to Nix, and his efficiency's looking out pretty good, 15 of 23, so he's in the mid-60s in terms of percentage, very respectable, 144 yards, but no touchdowns in the air to speak of, was not picked off. But again, if you're limited to kind of a shallow to mid-range level of passing, then, you know, for 6 yards on average a pass, then the whole deal of not having a pick, you just weren't taking a lot of looks downfield. And there were a couple of overthrown passes to Anthony Schwartz, Sean Shivers, I think, as well, had a pitch, a halfback pitch that was overthrown by Nix there as well. Seth Williams, obviously the leading receiver there, 3 catches for 51 yards, no touchdowns to speak of, his longest was 28. Corey, Auburn coming out of that half and in that third quarter had a 10-0 run. Looks like they were in control of the game, had everything going right. They're clicking on offense. Seth Williams is breaking ankles and is bruising egos in the process. And all of a sudden we get to this fourth quarter and Auburn has this engine that's just going and they break down in that fourth quarter. What happened?
Well, I mean, it's a situation, if you're an Auburn Tiger fan, it's the same script on a different day, because Bo Nix did lead Auburn in carries with 11 carries. And one of those runs that he had was one of the most impressive quarterback scrambles that you'll see, because he was dead to rights. And I know Andy Burcham even started to say, and he sacked, but he held on just a second and he gets away. And that was a remarkable scramble that he did have for that touchdown. But when you start talking about the Auburn Tigers and the problems that they have, it kind of makes me scratch my head, because Auburn Tigers are now 5-4. And to get the Gus Bus going, you have to have a great running game. And if Bo Nix is your leading rusher, that's great. You don't want him to be. But Bigsby not being healthy, you know, Shivers has speed and has not been able to get it done. And you mentioned in the Iron Bowl, Seth Williams only had 3 receptions. And then you turn around the next week, and against Texas A&M, another top 5 team, he has another 3 receptions. So that's 6 receptions in a matter of a couple of weeks. And that's your leading wide receiver. That's a guy who has an NFL-type build at wide receiver for the Auburn Tigers. And Auburn didn't turn the football over, so that wasn't an issue. It was just their ability to collapse and be outscored 17-0 in the fourth quarter alone. And that's what really hurt, because Auburn comes out and scores 10 in the third, and you're thinking, okay, this is the type of game that we really needed to play as Auburn Tigers. This is Auburn football. Then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, again, that motor, it fails you. And I just want to know, you know, Chad Morris is the first-year offensive coordinator at Auburn. Is it a Chad Morris problem? Is it a Gus Malzahn problem? I would love to hear from Auburn faithful at 251-343-0106 to see and find out exactly what the problem is. Is it a problem of Auburn not being healthy this season? Because you get started off and then you're not able to come away with big wins and big opportunities. But I just think the offense is what's really, really hurting Auburn at this point in time. And you get Texas A&M to where they're ultimately winning the game 31-20. And now Texas A&M sitting at number 5, right outside of the top 4 for college football. And then their game gets postponed against Ole Miss this coming Saturday, which was breaking news on the Paul Feinbaum show right before we came on the air. If that game is not made up, then what do you do if you're Texas A&M? You just sit and play the waiting game now and are actually able to break into the top 20 or the top 4 and get into the college football playoffs, because you know Florida and Alabama have to play each other. You know Clemson and Notre Dame have to play one another. You know that Ohio State has only played 5 games, and now Texas A&M, if their regular season ends at 9 games, I think that Texas A&M can get in and have an opportunity to make noise. But we talked about it during the break, Ian. Again, 2 SEC schools having an opportunity to make the college football playoffs.
And for, I believe, the first time since the college football playoffs started, there would be 2 ACC teams in there as well, if we go by the brackets of having Clemson, Alabama, Notre Dame, and Texas A&M. Now, Corey, we've had this conversation before, and I've had this conversation with several different people. One thing I want to get to about Auburn, I think it is a Malzahn problem with the development of the offense, and I think it is a Morris problem with the calling of the offense. Would that be a fair assessment, or is there something else that you think may be kind of underlying?
Well, I mean, Morris was charged with calling the offense this season. That's one of the things that Gus hired him to do, is to call the offense. Player development, I think that does ultimately fall back on your head coach. Yes, I do agree with that. And when you start looking around the SEC and some of these records, Vanderbilt and Georgia, of course, got postponed. Alabama beats LSU 55-17. Kentucky beats South Carolina 41-18. Florida continues to climb up the polls. They beat Tennessee 31-19. In a fantastic finish, Missouri finds a way to beat Arkansas 50-48 in the shootout. And Texas A&M, of course, beats Auburn's 31-20 in the SEC. And you start talking about next week. Alabama and Arkansas will kick off at 11 o'clock a.m. Georgia is scheduled to play Missouri. Tennessee and Vanderbilt at 3 o'clock p.m. LSU and Florida's scheduled for 6 o'clock p.m. kickoff. Auburn and Mississippi State will play. And Ole Miss and Texas A&M have been postponed at this point in time. But out of those games next week, Auburn and Mississippi State. Mississippi State's 2-6. Auburn's 5-4. What do you think about that?
I'm going to favor Auburn on that. But I would not put it past Mississippi State to be able to pull that out, given the dysfunction that we've seen from this Auburn team and the way that they have their new logo, not including the fourth quarter, if you catch my drift there. Now, speaking of the college football playoffs, real quick, we'll change gears here. Two SEC schools, like you said, and in this hypothetical scenario where we have Notre Dame and Clemson, and it would be two ACC schools as well, we've had some people in the past, specifically 2018, the ring where you had Georgia and Alabama in the finals, and some people were kind of upset about having it, not just an all-ACC final, but even having two schools of the same conference in there in the first place. Now, given that Texas A&M would be put into the top four, that excludes Ohio State. Now, we have heard this conversation from Ohio State before. We need to get in. We need to get in. We need to have our share because we totally face competition in our conference. But one thing I need to bring up, Ohio State fans, is that, one, your level of competition is down this year compared to the SEC. And two, another thing that you need to keep in mind is you haven't played as many games, so you're less proven in the eyes of the committee. I'm not looking this from a fan of Alabama's perspective like I am. I'm looking this from the committee's perspective. The committee is going to remember, like you said last week, what you have done more recently than at the beginning of the season. Because if you come out and you beat the premature poll number one team, but then they end up going 2-8, then they weren't, the premature poll number one ranking was not meant to be there. So one thing you have to keep in mind here is, if the SEC and ACC do end up having two teams apiece, does that mean that we need to reshift conferences, or is it just the ACC and SEC are on a different level entirely?
Right now, I think they're on a different level entirely. I mean, because you're looking at two SEC schools and two ACC schools, regardless of the amount of games that were played by any other conference or the lack of games that were being played by any other conference. This 2020 season, it's obvious that the two best teams are coming out of the ACC and the SEC. We'll wrap up our action here on Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5. When we come back, we'll reverse the trend and talk a little bit of what I saw in Tuscaloosa with the Super 7.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Sports Night, our last segment right here on this beautiful Monday night. Want everybody to make sure you bundle up a little bit frigid, a little bit brisk outside. And, you know, when I had the opportunity to start looking across the country, Dalton mentioned it in the first segment about all the Mobile Baldwin County talent that you see week in and week out at the collegiate level and at the NFL level. I start talking about Marlon Williams, the wide receiver from McGill-Tulane, who plays his college football at Central Florida. He is now a semifinalist for the Biletnikoff Award, and that goes to the nation's best wide receiver. And there are 11 candidates who were up for that award. Unfortunately, his high school teammate, Jalen Tolbert, did not make the cutoff list on that Biletnikoff Award, but he definitely deserved it as he put on a great show a couple of weeks ago against Arkansas State, had over 225 receiving yards and four touchdowns, and has definitely been the best player on the field for South Alabama this football season, and that started in week one. But congratulations to Marlon Williams. Looking forward to seeing him continue to flourish and have an opportunity to chase that bag in the NFL. And another Mobile Baldwin County and Blount High School product, Kadarius Toney, in the Tennessee game, had 8 receptions for 108 yards, scored a touchdown. And then opposite him, Bayless Jones Jr. had 4 receptions for 70 yards and a touchdown against the Florida Gators. So when you turned on your television and you were watching Florida and Tennessee, you saw Kadarius Toney from Blount. Then you see Bayless Jones Jr. from Saraland. And you start to know that there's a lot of talent. And then when Marlon Williams gets an opportunity to be a semifinalist for a prestigious award like the nation's top wide receiver, you just start to know that there is a plethora of talent. And it goes back to our first segment, like Dalton and I and Ian, we all talked about, the next head coach has a gold mine sitting right here in their backyard and can recruit very heavily along the I-10 corridor and be very successful. Switching gears to a couple of other headlines, we talked a couple of weeks ago about YouTube sensation Logan Paul knocking out Nate Robinson cold on his face. Now he's going to be in a boxing exhibition against Money Mayweather. That's scheduled for February 20th in a boxing exhibition. So we'll see if Logan Paul can try to knock out Money Mayweather, Floyd Mayweather, the same way that he did Nate Robinson.
Well, Jake Paul and Logan Paul are brothers. Jake Paul is the one who fought Nate Robinson. It's his brother who will be fighting Mayweather there. My reaction to this, whenever I first saw it, was a giant facepalm. In fact, it was so loud in the college library where I was studying that I had legitimately a couple of people come over who were playing pool and ask me if I was okay. Why? What does Mayweather have to gain from this?
Nothing.
Why would you tamper with the 50-0, man? You're as far as anyone cares, you are one of the greatest, if not the greatest, at what you did. Why are you coming back in again?
Has absolutely nothing to gain besides make a little bit more money to take care of his gambling habits that he may or may not have, to cover whatever spread or whatever club he decided to go into that night and make it rain. He can go ahead and make that money back because Floyd Mayweather doesn't need any type of money at all in, and that's definitely not why he's taking this fight. I think he's taking this fight to show that he's still in shape and to show that he's still relevant in boxing. And they're also talking about Evander Holyfield taking on Mike Tyson in an exhibition fight, and I think a lot of people, including myself, would probably want to watch that the same way we wanted to watch Roy Jones Jr. and Mike Tyson, regardless of what their ages are. We just want to see if they're able to stay upright or whether they're going to knock each other out or not. You know, another headline that, of course, there is NFL football tonight that has been being played. Monday Night Football is the Buffalo Bills playing the San Francisco 49ers. And you look at yesterday's NFL games, really no shockers across the league last night as the Kansas City Chiefs continue to prevail. But I would like to give a shout out to two former Alabama quarterbacks, Tua Tagovailoa leading his team to a win. The Miami Dolphins defeat the Bengals. And also Jalen Hurts throws his first professional touchdown for the Philadelphia Eagles against the Green Bay Packers. So I think moving forward, we talked about that 2 weeks ago, that Jalen Hurts would have an opportunity. The Philadelphia Eagles drafted him that high for a reason, and I think he will have an opportunity to lead that franchise moving forward.
Franchise QB,
I think he is, Ian. And then you're talking about the two Auburn quarterbacks. You look at Cam Newton and Jarrett Stidham, both having an opportunity to throw quarterbacks yesterday. So you had an Alabama and Auburn onslaught of touchdowns yesterday. That was fun to watch. But I'm going to go and finish the show tonight with the Super 7 finish in Bryant-Denny Stadium, the 7A state championship game between Thompson and Auburn. And you know it had to be an outstanding game if it led off on SportsCenter that Wednesday night. Scott Van Pelt, one of the best things he saw on that day was the Thompson versus Auburn game. Thompson ultimately defeats Auburn 29-28. And Thompson, if you have not heard it, scored 10 points in 18 seconds. And this isn't basketball. This is football, to where scoring 10 points in 18 seconds is almost unheard of. At the 118 mark, the cameras cut away and showed all the Thompson players crying and being consolidated by one another. They're able to block a punt after Auburn takes a set of three knees going backwards. On fourth down, they have their punt blocked. A scoop and score by Thompson, cut into the lead. Next, Thompson has to get an onside kick. They do get the onside kick. After they get it, the onside kick, two pass interference calls later, Thompson is set up to kick the game-winning field goal. And the bad thing about this Auburn high school team is they had three timeouts remaining during this entire onslaught and did not call one single timeout. But it was one of the most fantastic high school football finishes, definitely the most fantastic high school football finish that I've seen in the state of Alabama. There was one that took place in Plano, Texas in the late 80s that was probably the greatest high school football game that I've ever seen and the greatest comeback ever. But to have the state of Alabama start the Super 7 the way that it did and to have that type of fantastic finish, I think it's going to be up for an ESPY as one of the games of the year. Definitely one of the greatest comebacks of the year. But anytime you lead off SportsCenter and they're talking about it the next day, did you see this? It was trending on Twitter. Congratulations to Mark Freeman and his Thompson Warriors being back-to-back state champions, scoring 10 points in 18 seconds. And a series of four events had to transpire for the Warriors, and all four of them really did for them as they were able to win the 2020 state championship at the 7A level. It's been another great night of Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5. Look forward to joining you again next Monday night. Hopefully Dalton Orwig will be back in studio joining us. And for Ian Blair, done a wonderful job tonight on the board. Always a pleasure joining you. We're looking forward to talking to you again next Monday night right here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Have a good week, everybody.